Okay, we are back on the record. When we left off, Mr. Bickel, in response to cross-examination from Mr. Broughton, had provided a number of dates in response to a question from Mr. Broughton. He was reading from a couple of different documents, and those documents have been marked as Coyote Creek Exhibit Number 15 and Coyote Creek Exhibit Number 16. Mr. Biel indicated that it's his intention to offer these as exhibits. And I guess without, you know, going into too much detail as to testimony that's already been offered, if Mr. Bickel could maybe identify Exhibits 15 and Exhibit 16 and just briefly explain identify those exhibits for us for the record and where that information came from.
Coyote Creek Exhibit 15 lists nine water level readings from a groundwater monitoring well designated CM12-20C, and it is located approximately in the south portion of section 31, and it, my annotation here said it's roughly 180 to 200 feet west of the south field under discussion. With that is a plot of the data showing ground elevation, water elevation, stream elevation. The same data and information are shown on Coyote Creek Exhibit 16, but for monitoring well designated CM12-08B, which is located in the north portion of Section 31. And here again, it's the same display of groundwater measurements and a plot of those data.
Okay. And Mr. Biela agreed to offer Exhibits 15 and 16 at the request of Mr. Broughton. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, do you have any objection to the admission of Exhibits 15 and 16, Coyote Creek?
No, we don't. Thank you.
Okay. Coyote Creek Exhibits 15 and 16 are admitted, and Mr. Broughton, you can continue your cross-examination.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm sorry, I do want to clarify just a couple things on the exhibits before we move on. There's a column marked depth to water. Can you tell me from what point that depth is measured from? Meaning, is it the top of the casing or the ground elevation?
Ground elevation.
Okay. What is the proximity of these two monitoring wells to Coyote Creek?
They're very, very close to the creek proper, and without referencing my mapping, which I don't have at hand, the northmost well, it's on the scale of feet, you know, from the channel of Coyote Creek. And my recollection is of the site, it is on the opposite bank of Coyote Creek from Mr. Voigt's field, and it would be north of that field.
So the north monitoring well would be on the bank of Coyote Creek?
Yes.
Okay, and then the south monitoring well, you'd give me the location of that one?
Again, it's close to Coyote Creek. I, here again, without referencing mapping data, I couldn't give you a precise figure, but I estimate that it is probably 180 to 200 feet west of the south field.
And can you give us an approximation of how many feet it is from Coyote Creek?
Probably not.
If
here again, like I say, we're talking on a scale of feet.
So would this one also,
tens of feet.
This one also be on the bank of Coyote Creek?
Yes, I would describe it as such.
And because these monitoring wells are on the banks of Coyote Creek, the water table is going to be more subject to fluctuations in the creek than it would to any kind of sub-irrigation up on the terrace in the fields, right?
I would assume so, yes.
At the beginning of your report on page 2, you list a number of legal descriptions with township range and sections. And would it be fair to say that that is the area of study covered in this report?
Yes, that is the intent of that recounting.
Okay, and so the rather voluminous data and so forth included in the report relates to that study area?
Yes.
No further questions.
Ms. Jeff Goetzackel?
We have no questions.
Okay. Commissioner Chrisman?
Thanks, Your Honor. Mr. Norris talked about the boring and piezometer profiles. Can you go through with me again your answer to Mr. Biel's questioning? I didn't really understand. Did you disagree with Mr. Norris that they were not done, or did you disagree that OSM requires them?
No. They were not done because it is not a requirement for an alluvial valley report. The main requirement for an alluvial valley report is that it provide adequate data so that the regulatory authority can make a determination. And if sufficient data are available to make a demonstration as to the presence or absence of alluvial valley floors, and the regulatory authority deems that sufficient data, then the report meets its intended purposes. So here again, it's the regulatory authority can demand more data, request more data, however you care to phrase it, if the need is recognized.
Well, I'm not familiar with piezometers,
okay.
But would that have been valuable, useful, additional information?
Okay. Basically, a piezometer, or as I refer to as a groundwater monitoring well, are the same features. And here again, you talk about the desirability of data, and you can go to extremes, and you can acquire a lot of data, and that all adds information. When you reach a point, it is a point of diminishing returns. So what you need to do is provide adequate data to answer the question at hand. And the question at hand with an AVF report is an AVF present. in the sense of SMACRA. And you have an adequate report when there's enough data for a regulatory agency to make that determination.
Okay. And then he also talked about doing about monitoring daily water fluctuations in August and September from daytime to nighttime. Now, I see in these exhibits there are some readings in that August and September traditional dry season time frame, but when he went through that, that did sound appealing to me as someone who didn't even know what a piezometer was. but really, you know, to monitor that difference between daytime and nighttime, mm-hmm. and if it was dropping a lot and consistently, that would seem logical to me to conclude that that meant that the plants were using that water.
Yes.
So should that... Is that something that should have been done here?
Well, obviously, we didn't sense that it was necessary in this instance, and it is something that the Public Service Commission sensed was not necessary. Here again, let us keep in mind that the area in question, Mr. Voigt's two fields that he uses primarily for alfalfa production are outside the study area of this report. So we're talking about an area that wasn't addressed in this report. To your point about using diurnal observations, day-nighttime observations, we have done this in other instances, and we, you know, haven't obtained conclusive results. So here again, it was not done in this instance, and it is not required by SMACRA.
And in this case, you felt there was enough evidence of no AVF that it wasn't necessary to continue doing more.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Mr. Norris also said that land with AVF is afforded additional protection in OSM regulations. If there were AVF here, since it's outside of the study area, what would you expect would have been done differently?
Well, that's stipulated in the guidelines and also in North Dakota regulations, that there are certain measures that need to be taken to protect the AVF as a resource, and that is apart from the protection that's provided by the other permitting requirements.
Can you give a real broad assessment of what those protections would be?
Not off the top of my head, no. I would have to refer to the regs and the guidelines, but not off the top of my head.
Okay. So now I'm getting away from the AVF stuff, so maybe this isn't your area, but it has to do with water. Were you here last week for the first day of the testimony?
Yes, I was.
Mr. Kessler testified, and, you know, much of our discussion when we talk about as good or better has been about crop and hay and grazing production. And Mr. Kessler, I think, correctly pointed out that water needs to be as good or better also. And What's the end result after mine reclamation as far as access to water for wells and things like that on this land?
The requirements in the rules are very specific, and I believe in terms of in-use water supply, Mr. Deitch could provide the exact quotation, but during the, and after, any in-use water supplies that are affected have to be replaced so that there is no interruption in the availability of water, and that's whatever measure is necessary. In terms of reclamation, and this is, here again, we're going into the area of the mining permit proper, but effects to groundwater and surface water resources have to be documented, they have to be predicted, and there is a process by which the potential effects are weighed against the reclamation steps that are taken to minimize or remediate those, and the difference, those effects that cannot be remediated are considered consequences of mining, and they have to be weighed as such in the permit issuance process. So this is a rather detailed and fairly complex part of the permitting process.
No other questions, Your Honor.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Mr. Bickle.
Oops. Thank you, Mr. Bickle. So I just want to understand here, your report is outlined in Exhibit A, the black area, correct? Your report covers that area?
Let me refer to
your AVF study report. The within the black line.
Yeah, excuse me. I'm not delaying on answering. I'm just getting to Exhibit A. Yes, that is correct.
Okay, and then in evaluating the area within the permit boundaries, but outside of your report, did you look at the material from the Dakota Westmoreland Corporation AVF study? Was that done by the PSC? I'm assuming that's what was relied upon to develop the AVF conclusions for the permit location, those areas not covered by your report.
I don't understand the question fully.
Okay, so you
spoke of the, in developing the permit, or are you speaking of the AVF report?
In determining whether or not there is presence of AVF, your report covered a vast majority of
right.
the permit location, but some of it is outside. So what was used to evaluate AVF in those areas?
Okay. You're
the purple areas that are within the permit boundaries but not covered by your report.
Okay. Those areas have, and here again, I'm assuming you're talking about what at the time was assumed to be a probable permit boundary, the yellow line.
Right.
And then there is a portion of the Dakota Westmoreland AVF study that is within there. Basically, that area within the Dakota Westmoreland study has been deemed to not be AVF. So that's why my boundaries around it is disregarded.
Okay. So and previous studies
now
concluded
that. Oh, I'm sorry.
Previous studies concluded that didn't have the presence of AVF.
Right.
So you studied what hadn't been studied before. Okay. And so Mr. Norris? Yeah. He had a lot of pretty negative things to say about the Dakota Westmoreland study. Have you reviewed that study?
Not in full detail, but I certainly have examined it, yes.
Did you complete it? You didn't do that study?
No.
No. One of his conclusions was that the study wasn't performed at the right time. It should have been done in midsummer when you could more appropriately evaluate whether sub-irrigation is being used to support the plant growth. Is that a fair assessment of this study?
As a total assessment of the study, well, I won't render an opinion on that. My total assessment of the study is that it was adequate for its purposes.
Mm-hmm. So in your expert judgment, this study looked at the appropriate things for determining the presence of AVF, and so its conclusions can be trusted.
Yeah. You can make an illogical assumption on that because it went through the review process with the regulatory agency, in this case the Reclamation Division of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. And to reach the point of issuing a determination, they felt they had adequate data.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Can you explain the difference between AVF and subirrigation? Is there a distinction there that's important? People seem to be making that distinction.
That's a good question. Sub-irrigation is one aspect of AVF determination. The concept of an alluvial valley floor was developed early on in the development of SMACRA, and its intent is to protect those areas where stream valleys and the associated agricultural production associated with them was really, and this is a term that's, I believe, used in the guidelines. It was certainly used in the preliminary work. It's the backbone of the agricultural economy. Put in simple words, if the production of hay and other crops essential to livestock production were not available in those valleys, it would be largely impossible to ranch there with the level of success that currently exists. And the classic areas, for instance, along the Powder River Basin, these areas are very, very evident. Mm-hmm. Without hay production in those stream valleys, which are greener, more verdant, it shows up. Go on Google Earth, you can see it. Without that, the regional agricultural economy, which is primarily driven by ranching, would be devastated.
So,
and that's it was designed to protect those areas.
So, if I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying that AVF basically makes farming and ranching possible when it's present. Without it, it would be too dry.
In those arid regions, yes.
So it's not just added production; it's basically production.
Pretty much,
just a
yes.
little benefit. So if it's increased production or you're seeing areas where there's pockets of better production, would that be more indicative of sub-irrigation?
Sub-irrigation is a component of the alluvial valley floor concept. And that's why it's dwelled on here. And in some areas further west, alfalfa production and the presence of sub-irrigation is critical. And in other areas, it's not. Many of the areas along streams in this part of North Dakota are cropped. You raise crops not for livestock feeding purposes. You raise other crops. Different times of year, depending, or not different times of year, but depending on wet and dry periods, crops can be rotated on these areas. So it does get to be complex, but an alluvial valley floor is far more than simple sub-irrigation.
And are there other things that you can point to that might be terms that we could understand that are also present besides sub-irrigation that are key to an alluvial valley floor?
The potential for water flooding, where you can divert water during high stages of a stream and spread it over land where you can, and in some areas of the West where you can resort to other forms of irrigation. Here again, it's to look at the critical nature of that production along stream valleys in terms of the economy of the individual rancher and of the community and region.
Okay, so flooding and water available for irrigation, any other major kind of criteria for an AVF?
There are others. I can't pull it off the top of my head.
But are they unusual in AVF? Are these rare?
Oh, you mean these criteria?
No, just the presence of an AVF. Is that a kind of a unique thing? Is it? Are they kind of rare?
It depends on climate. North Dakota, the northern and central part of North Dakota, is west of the 100th meridian, and that means the requirements for the Great American West under SMCRA apply to us. But in terms of our climate and our climate history, we're wetter than that, except in the southernmost part of the state and the southwestern part of the state. So that is why alluvial valley floors, in the sense of SMCRA, are rare or almost non-existent here. We have abundant moisture, and this abundant moisture lets hay and other feed materials, cropping, to occur on uplands. You get further west in arid areas. That's not the case.
Okay. Okay, I was kind of curious and following up on some of Commissioner Crispin's questions about the borings. That was one of the areas where Mr. Norris was most, he made two recommendations. Need to bring boring and water level profiles and detail the meaningful examination of the data that's pertinent to the evaluation of AVF. You've already talked about the fact that you think the second element has been done. You mentioned the borings. He thought, in my notes, four or so borings are needed to determine an AVF, and if there's two been completed, is there a standard for how many borings you need to determine an AVF?
No.
And does it matter where they are taken? Do you need to do them, you know, right in the middle of the field where there is concern, or how close does it need to be?
Here again, this has to stay flexible, and it is flexible in the regs and the application of the regulations, I'm sorry. When you deal with arid environments further west, there are different requirements and different needs for documenting alluvial valley floras, largely because they play an extremely critical role in the agricultural economy.
Mm-hmm. And so in other areas, maybe areas where Mr. Norris has done more work, it's more common to have additional or larger number of borings?
That would be my assumption. But
okay. All right. I think that concludes my questions so far. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Kolk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Dave, for your testimony. I just have a couple of my colleagues always do such a good job of asking the questions. I appreciate that. Would you agree if I said that there are many things that determine groundwater level? It's not just one thing that determines groundwater level. It could be rainfall. It could be many different things.
Yes. Kind of summed up as the hydrologic cycle. Yes.
So to say one thing would have a isolated impact on groundwater, it's hard to do that.
Pretty much, yeah.
What would your thoughts be about how important is understanding soil type to understanding hydraulic flow?
You get into the area of soil science, which is outside my area of expertise. You're dealing with infiltration, rates of infiltration, as was pointed out. You're dealing with capillary responses. Soils, and here again, using soils in a general sense as well as the geology of the unaltered materials below the soil, yeah, this is important in understanding the process.
Okay, and then the last question I had was how much time did you spend reviewing the data that you talked about earlier? In a general sense, was it a year, a week?
Oh, on a scale of months, I would say, yeah.
Would it have been hard to do that and to review all the data available in a couple weeks?
No.
Would you agree that the longer time you can look at the data, the more thorough your conclusion can be?
Yes. That is the primary reason why there is this stipulation that the AVF information be generated before the permit proper.
Okay, thank you. No further questions.
Mr. Biela, follow-up?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Broughton?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Bickle, are you familiar with the SMACRA regulations, both in the eastern and western part of the United States?
Not to a complete extent in terms of the eastern part of the United States.
You're aware, though, that in the eastern part of the states, it's not necessary to make the alluvial valley floor determinations?
Yes.
And those are made for any coal mines west of the 100th meridian?
Correct.
And that's because those are considered by federal regulation to be arid or semi-arid areas.
Yes.
And because in semi-arid or arid areas, the existence of alluvial valley floors are crucial to successful agricultural production.
That was the intent and assumption of SMACRA, yes.
In your regulatory work, did you ever review a document from the Office of Surface Mining Reclamation and Enforcement titled Alluvial Valley Floor Identification and Study Guidelines?
Yes.
I'm going to hand this to the witness. This one is the one that's been discussed by the parties. I think we have some extra copies if anyone needs one, but I think everyone was going to have a copy, and the PSC was going to introduce their binder into the record for this one.
Mr. Biela, do you have a copy, or do you know what he's referencing?
Yes, Your Honor, we have it.
Okay. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
I have no objection, and we can produce a clean, non-notes-on-it binder for the record. I think everyone else has it electronically.
Okay. Go ahead. Continue, Mr. Broughton.
Just realize the commissioners may not. So
yeah, we got it.
You do.
Yep.
Okay.
But just when you do question him on that, can you just identify, you know, the location, what specifically, where you're at on that document?
Your Honor,
go ahead.
My notes. This is Voight number 2. Correct.
I think that's something.
Exhibit.
I believe you're referencing a different document, Mr.
Yeah.
Broughton.
Right. Yeah, I think
then
so.
Then maybe we don't have it.
Do you want me to go upstairs and get one?
No, I can give them copies.
Okay.
You've got additional copies, Mr. Broughton, you're going to supply to the commissioners?
Correct.
All right. And I guess just so we're clear, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, you're going to later offer the document that we're reviewing now as an exhibit. It's the same document, though?
Well, actually, okay, I think the document Derek's handing out, correct me if I'm wrong, is a subset. It's not the whole thing.
Okay.
When it was time for me to question, I had a question for Dr. Bickel, and then I was going to ask for it then because we've all been talking about it here for an hour. So I think it might be appropriate to get the binder admitted fairly soon. I don't care whose it is. It's called, I just don't have a clean one to give for the record, 1983 OSM AVF Identification Study Guidelines, so that the whole thing is in the record.
All right.
Get one now or at the next break, if you want to. Thanks.
I have a complete copy of it in a binder. We can use ours if there's no objections.
Well, that's fine from the standpoint of offering that and getting it admitted as the exhibit. We're not going to submit full copies to everybody. Is that correct?
No, because, okay, the parties have had it electronically for some week or so. We have an electronic version, so that everyone will have access to that and for docketing purposes. And then there will be the one hard copy. Now, if commissioners want their own copy, we can do that too when there's time. But I didn't think we had to bring 12 copies of this large thing.
Sure. I just want to make sure that everybody's referencing the same document. And I guess if we want to get that document admitted now, we can. I guess it's Mr. Biela has the witness on the stand, but it's not really his exhibit, and I don't think it's necessary. I think we can just have somebody offer it now and get it admitted. It doesn't have to go through Mr. Biela's witness right now, as long as counsel all agree to that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you want to offer that, Mr. Broughton?
Yeah, we will offer the exhibit.
Okay. And let's see. Let's just mark that as Voight Exhibit Number 15. Mr. Biela, are you okay with that?
Yes, Your Honor.
And Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Yes, thank you.
All right. So just for reference, this is Voight Exhibit Number 15. And Mr. Broughton, you can continue now.
I'm going to ask you to, for the commissioners and Mr. Bickle, I've tabbed the page that I'm going to refer to, but it shows up as, I believe, II-11.
What was the reference again, Derek?
I believe it's II-11.
Would that be Roman numeral 2-11? Would that be?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Bickle, as you can see, this page refers to the definition of an alluvial valley floor. And is it your understanding that with respect to number one, the geologic criteria, everybody has agreed that that criteria has been met with respect to an AVF determination in the study area?
Yes.
Okay, and so when we go to number two, sub A states water is available by surface water irrigation or sub-irrigation and is being or has successfully been used to enhance production of agriculturally useful vegetation. Would you agree that the importance of the discussion of sub-irrigation here is that if sub-irrigation exists in this place, then it also follows that an AVF is present?
Only to the degree as set aside in 2A that it is used to enhance production. The presence, mere presence alone, does not serve as a criterion.
Okay, and so assuming that this sub-irrigation exists and is being used by Mr. Voight to enhance his alfalfa production, you'd agree if those two factors are met, then there is an AVF present here?
No.
And why not?
Because the whole concept rests, the AVF concept rests on the significance both of the degree of enhancement of production and the significance, the importance, or the critical element of that production to the overall operation. It's a matter of scale.
Is that with respect to mitigation of the hydrology of the AVF or to determining whether or not an AVF actually exists?
The determination.
Okay. And so if it is crucial or important to Mr. Voight's overall operation, you agree that, and there is sub-irrigation occurring, you agree that there is an AVF present?
Here again, I think the critical issue is the scale of the resource and its overall role in the individual's operation. That is the intent of it.
I understand. And my question is, if sub-irrigation exists in these alfalfa fields and production in those fields is crucial to his overall operation, you admit an AVF exists here?
If it is crucial in the sense that his operation is wholly dependent on it or largely dependent on it, then that would have to be considered. Yes. If that answers your question, I'm sorry.
If his operation is largely dependent on the production in the alfalfa fields and those alfalfa fields are sub-irrigated, you agree that an AVF exists here?
Objection asked and answered.
I don't know that he directly answered. I'll overrule it.
If the production on that acreage is critical and his operation is dependent on it, and it is sub-irrigated, then that would be considered an AVF.
Okay. That's all I have.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
I just had one little question about, I think, about these guidelines, but I'm not sure. A few times you talked about people were asking you about whether the monitoring wells were required, and your response was sort of sufficient data is required, and so if you need them.
Yes.
And you said the regs or the guidelines don't require the wells. They require sufficient data for determination. Were you referring to this document in those answers, to these AVS guidelines or to something else?
I was referring, here again, I can't give you the exact citation, but I'm referring to the administrative code, North Dakota Administrative Code, I believe.
So there are, in addition to the guidelines, there are rules on AVF.
Correct.
So, okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Commissioner Chrisman?
I'm trying to evaluate your definitions of some of the words that you used in answering Mr. Broughton's questions. When you talk about if the operation depends on the sub-irrigation, so how are we to evaluate that? Does that mean that we would need for it to not depend on that sub-irrigated land and the hay, that we would need to deem that grazing land is pretty much useless without it, or just that his specific operation and the exact way that he operates it would need to be changed?
Yes.
If not for this.
There are areas, I cannot cite them, within both the guidelines and I don't believe in our regulations, that talk about matters of scale. And I think from all testimony, there's no refuting that when you plant alfalfa on Mr. Voigt's 2 field, there is the potential that those plants can reach and utilize groundwater. The question, and please repeat your question again.
Well,
I got lost in my own comment.
I wrote down in my notes that you said if the operation depends on the sub-irrigation and the sub-irrigation exists, it would be AVF. And I want to know what you mean by if the operation depends on that. For us to determine that Mr. Voigt's operation depends on this, does that mean as he operates it now, so if it wasn't for this, he'd have to make some changes? Or does that mean I should determine in my mind that if not for this, everything else is just gone, it's useless, the grazing is ineffective, and everything is useless?
That was essentially the concern with the AVF provisions in SMACRA, and as we pointed out in the Western United States, is that if that capability of production along major stream courses were damaged, it would be a critical blow to an operator's capability to produce livestock. And if that exists, then you are dealing with an alluvial valley floor situation. And I think what we're dealing with here is a situation of scale. Indeed, Mr. Voigt's two alfalfa fields do provide income. It's part of his operation. But assuming the worst case that they were damaged, that would not be the end of his production. And here again, you're taking me out on thin ice. I am not, a range scientist, and I don't have at hand even the acreage that Mr. Voigt operates, how much of the other areas than these two fields are being cropped, capable of producing hay. But in this region, there are upland areas as well as lowland areas that can produce livestock feed. And so that's where the matter of scale is important, and this test of, is it a critical factor in his operation? And it's not so much the question, at least in my mind, as to whether his alfalfa is being sub-irrigated or not. It's the question of the scale of that production in terms of his total operation. And here again, we're talking not about environmental protection, because that's dealt with in the permit proper. We're just talking about this initial test to see if an alluvial valley floor is present. Does that help?
It does. Thank you.
Is that it?
Yes.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
I have no more questions. Okay. Thanks.
Commissioner Kolk?
Thank you, Honor. Thank you once again, Dave. In your Coyote Creek Exhibit 13, you talked about Exhibit B, a portion of OSM RE 1985. What is that exactly? Trying to see if that relates to this 1983 version at all.
There were two separate reports, the 1983 guidelines, and then subsequent to that, I believe OSM contracted for a regional, I forget to what extent or what areas, but it resulted in this reconnaissance survey of West Central North Dakota. And they work primarily with aerial photography. Some work on the ground, but that was fairly limited. And as it says in the introduction of the report, the idea is to look at areas that could potentially be alluvial valley floors. And it was a screening process.
Okay, I noticed on page 4 of Exhibit 13, you talked about the 85, which would be perhaps the updated version, has been subsequently found to have numerous false positive AVF areas. Could you just explain exactly what that means and how that came about?
Okay, they produced these maps of potential alluvial valley floor areas, and subsequent investigation has shown that most of these areas are not alluvial valley floors. And you get back to the crux of the issue, and that is that in West Central North Dakota, we have a climate that allows production on uplands. Many of these areas, there is not sub-irrigation present, as they surmised. And here again, in the defense of OSM, if you wish, in the introductory parts of that document, it says, well, this is just a reconnaissance survey, and they used all of the qualifying words. In geology, we call them weasel words, to say, well, this isn't that important. But at the time that document was issued, it carried great weight. And so whenever an alluvial valley floor area comes up, it has to be scrutinized very carefully. And the net result has been that most of these areas are not alluvial valley floors.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Biella, any follow-up?
Now, Dave, I believe you had previously indicated that looking at the data you looked at, that these lowland hay fields, they are not indicative of sub-irrigation. Would that be correct?
Are you directing this toward Mr. Voigt's field? I did not evaluate those in terms of my AVF report. That was outside the area of the report.
Right, but what did that report indicate to you with respect to water and runoff and serving those fields?
Basically, what we did see is that fields in long floodplains are more affected by surface water conditions, precip, runoff, and so forth, than anything that could be attributed to groundwater.
And that would be true of Mr. Voigt's report, would it be?
When you, yes. And when you look at the Dakota Westmoreland AVF report, I believe on the last pages they summarized that.
And did you, those conclusions. You review that report?
Not extensively, but enough to familiarize.
And did you concur with their findings of no AVF within Section 31 of Mr. Voigt's fields?
I accept their findings, yes.
And that report was issued, I believe, back in 2009. Is that correct?
Oh, still rooting again here. October 2009 on copy I have.
And that deals with Mr. Voigt's land, Section 31, is that correct?
Yes, that was included.
And to your knowledge, was that AVF report challenged by Mr. Voigt at this PSC or in any other forum?
I would have no knowledge of that. I'm sorry.
That would conclude our... Mr. Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Broughton.
Mr. Bickle, again, it's your opinion that the determination of an AVF is contingent on both sub-irrigation as well as the fact that the sub-irrigation is crucial or critical to the farming operation. Do I have that right?
That the AVF... the ability to produce on a floodplain is critical to an operation.
So the AVF determination is made prior to the determination of whether it's critical to the farming operation?
That is part of the determination, yes.
Now, my question is, I think I'm getting confused here, but the determination of whether or not an AVF exists is made prior to determining whether or not it is critical to a farming operation.
There is overlap in the process because the determination of an AVF being present is not only a hydrologic or a scientific determination of the setting, but in making that initial determination, the scale and the importance of that area comes into play. Here again, you have to keep in mind that What you're dealing with is a screening process to identify a potentially critical area to not only an individual farming or ranching operation or to the agricultural economy of an area.
And so in all of the materials that you reviewed, can you identify the data collected and information collected that related to the impact of AVFs on anyone's farming operation?
Well, no, there were no economic data collected.
Have you turned to Roman numeral 1-7 of the Alluvial Valley Floor Identification and Study Guidelines? It is the diagram on your page, flow chart?
Yes, figure one.
Yes. We have four blocks at the top, and then it goes down to two different blocks. The one looking at the page to the left is AVFs in adjacent area. You'd agree that that's what we have with respect to Mr. Voigt's alfalfa fields?
No, because there was no determination of an AVF present there.
Okay. What you're saying is that they determined there was no AVF.
Yes.
Okay. If there was a determination that there was an AVF, that would have come prior to the next box here, which is AVF significant to farming?
Okay.
You referred to the Administrative Code in North Dakota. Are you familiar with North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69, 5.2-10-03, permit applications, criteria for permit approval or denial?
Generally, I can't cite it or recall it off the top of my head.
And subsection B2 of that code says if the permit area or adjacent area contains an alluvial valley floor, then you look at the significance of the impact of the operations on farming. Does that change your answer to my prior question at all with respect to whether or not you have to assess the importance of the AVF to farming in making an AVF determination?
It is still, in terms of sound practice, to make this decision, because there are, in terms of guidelines and elsewhere, consideration of scale.
But as you said, there was absolutely no consideration of the economics with respect to agriculture for this AVF determination that you saw on the record.
That's correct.
No further questions.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
We don't have any questions at this time.
Okay. Commissioner Chrisman?
No questions, Your Honor.
Commissioner Fedorchak? Commissioner Kolk? Okay. Mr. Biella, anything further?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Bickle, you can step down. Thank you. Thank you. I think at this time we'll break for lunch. Start up again at 1 p.m.